Hello and welcome to episode 67 of the Desi Outsiders podcast. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And today we have Trisha Sakhujawala on our show, the CEO of Brown Girl Magazine. Brown Girl Magazine serves as an anchor for South Asians who believe in gender equality and create content that provides a connection between the readers, trailblazers, community leaders, and all the badass women in the South Asian community.
We spoke to Trisha about how this small idea had started back in 2008 and how 10 years later they've grown and expanded in the US, London and Canada. Not only do they have their website running with over 150 contributors, they successfully run their own YouTube channel and recently launched a podcast, Queering Desi. Trisha discusses everything from the ethos of Brown Girl Magazine to how they strive to become the powerhouse of South Asian media for Desis abroad. So without further ado, let's jump right into the show.
Welcome to the show, Trisha. Ankita and I have been following Brown Girl Magazine for a very long time and was so excited to hear the story about how it all started and the journey you've been through to be where you are today.
Absolutely. I'm excited to be chatting with you guys, and I've now been looking at, you know, and stalking you guys as well. So the excitement is definitely mutual.
So why don't we just start off by telling our listeners a little something about Brown Girl Magazine and Trisha, what you specifically do there?
Absolutely. Yeah, sure. So Brown Girl Magazine is an online platform that caters to young South Asian women living across the diaspora. And then also very recently, we realized that it's important for us to expand on our mission, which is to also focus on South Asian men and also start focusing on South Asian women that are above the age of 35, because we realized we were seeing so much traffic from both the male demographic and the 35 plus demographic. But in terms of our content, we're focusing on literally anything and everything that relates to being South Asian and living in the diaspora, whether it's our the mix of our cultures, food, language. Of course, we're following all types of trending news, pop culture. We're keeping up with Desis who are in Hollywood, but then we're also keeping up with timely and trending news that's coming in from our home countries, such as Pakistan, India, Bangladesh, so on and so forth. And then my role is I'm the CEO and co-founder, and I wear multiple hats. So, you know, for 10 minutes, I can be editor-in-chief. The next minute, I can be social media manager. But then honestly, a minute later, I could be doing something extremely tiny and trivial, whether it's fixing a flyer or getting on a call and making sure X, Y, and Z is being done. So I really consider Brown Girl, you know, my baby. And I recently quit my full time just 4 months ago to pursue BG, you know, wholeheartedly. So I'm in it to win it.
And you said that you just quit your job full-time. You just quit your full-time job to help you.
But she also did quit her job full-time. That also makes sense.
It also makes sense. But it was Aditi Mehta back in 2008 who started Brown Girl Magazine initially. And she had the idea of empowering young South Asian women. But back then, Trisha, there wasn't much in the internet world, especially for South Asians. There were a couple of YouTubers around the US and the UK. But from what I remember, they were mainly just doing a lot of comedy skits. So there wasn't nothing that was focused on empowering people. So do you know what might have triggered this idea 10 years ago?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, of course, everything that we're doing today and everything I've been able to do for the past 6-7 years at Brown Girl is all courtesy to Aditi Mehta. So, you know, she was my longtime business partner and I respect her so much. And I don't even think she realizes what she had created, you know, and it's manifest into something so large now. But you're absolutely correct. I mean, even Superwoman, she launched her channel, if I'm not wrong, in 2010. So it is exciting to know that Brown Girl, you know, is definitely one of the first creations, for at least what we know, in North America. And so she started it on the very simple fact that she found a void of young South Asian women living in the USA. So her mission was extremely small, and I love that she was able to start so small and it organically grew. But she just wanted to focus on young women her age in college who didn't see themselves in media or on the internet. And so she started writing with her friends in Austin, Texas, and little by little, more people started finding it online on Facebook. And then I found it randomly in 2010 on Facebook myself. And I, at that time, I was dabbling between, you know, different minors and majors. And I had picked up a minor in journalism. And I was like, oh, my God, like, I could totally relate to this. Like, I had never seen a blog that was writing content that relates to me, whether it's about, you know, being hairy or being dark skin or having a curfew to go home to at a certain time, you know. So I was pleasantly surprised. And so I reached out to her in 2010. And, you know, since then, I've just been obsessed.
Do you think the idea of Brown Girl magazine sort of came at the right moment in time in the internet generation? Sort of like you were riding the crest of the wave, because it was a very unique idea back then. Do you think if Brown Girl magazine was created maybe a few years later, it probably wouldn't have received the same boost that it did back in 2008?
You know, I actually think that if Brown Girl was created exactly 4 years ago now, we would have been able to do better. Because really? We grew really, really, really slow. I mean, we've been around for a decade, you know, I mean, you just think of how much people can accomplish in a decade. I mean, Facebook pretty much launched around the same time, right? They launched a few years before we did, I think 15 years or whatever it was. But I really think that our growth has been really slow because we took our time with it. And we made sure that it was very organic, but I think that the support that other South Asian platforms have been receiving now in the past 2 to 3 years is so different from the kind of support we received 5, 6, 7 years ago. I think that there's a lot more community awareness of South Asian services, products, and people now than there was 10 years ago. So I think we're receiving a lot more love and support now. So even if we had launched 3, 4 years ago, I think it would have been okay.
That's so interesting.
It's an interesting point. Yeah, I've thought about this a lot. I've thought about this a lot. And of course, I'm so grateful that we've been around for so long. And I think that is obviously the biggest thing that makes us different. That's what helps us stand out, is that we've been able to survive 10 years with and without the support of many South Asians. So I'm grateful that we've been able to kind of push through. But but I think the kind of community support we're seeing for the past 4 years exactly is so different from what we had received earlier.
Yeah, but I think it's just the internet is a bit of a strange world. I mean, Ankita and I always discuss this as well. Like, you just never know what works at what time.
Yeah.
Something that you don't expect to blow up might blow up.
Yeah.
And something that you put in hours and hours of effort into might not even receive a tiny bit of attention. So I guess it is very tricky to know what the internet world is like and what would succeed and what wouldn't.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. Absolutely.
Today, Trisha, Brown Girl has so many mediums. Like, you have a website, there's a YouTube channel, you're on Instagram, you even have a podcast. But you did tell us about the beginnings. But even then, in 2008, 2009, all of these other platforms were slowly growing as well. So did you think Brown Girl started off with the idea of just blogging? Or were all of these options still there? You know, were you thinking of launching into them?
Definitely in the beginning, it was, you know, the growth was slow and we were just focusing on producing content for the website. And I think that just having a really strong focus on writing quality content with great keywords has helped us throughout the years, because we see so much organic traffic coming in from search engines like Yahoo, Bing, and Google. So for many years, you know, and even still now, more than 60% of our traffic is actually coming in from search engines. So while we do, of course, love and, you know, really put a lot of efforts into our social media pages, we know that the brunt of our traffic is coming in from those search engines. So at the end of the day, bread and butter will always be the content that we put on the website. Of course, whatever we're doing on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, also YouTube, of course, it does help support it and it spreads the message. But we know that our content on Google and other search engines are doing really well for us.
And 10 years later today, Brown Girl magazine has around 150 contributors, and you have a team in the US, you have one in London, Canada. You did tell us a little bit about the process or how long it took to grow so big. But what was the process really like to become such a big team?
Daunting, stressful, but at the same time, just really overwhelming and heartwarming and exciting. It's really cool to think that, you know, girls like yourself sitting across the world are looking at us and reading us and are being inspired by us. You know, I'll never forget just maybe a few years ago, I had a girl from Sri Lanka. She was like, hi, I would love for you to sponsor a visa for me because I want to work for Brown Girl. And I was just like, girl, no one's doing this full time. Like, I wish I could sponsor it, you know? So like, people across the world want to leave their homes and their families so that we can sponsor them so that they could work with us full time. And that to me is like the biggest testament on the type of, you know, it's the reason why we need to continue growing. So there are so many days where I'm completely fed up and tired and I just don't feel like we can keep going and keep, you know, pushing forward. But then I really do think about, honestly, the millions of readers who are seeing and reading and taking inspiration from Brown Girl. So it goes a really long way.
Trisha, when we started Desi Outsiders, because we cater to a South Asian community as well, within just months, we were pretty shocked to find out that most of our listeners were based in the US, more than India. And this was very interesting to us because we were primarily catering to a South Asian community and we thought that our listeners were going to come from the South Asian community, but they were all based in the US and Canada. Where are your readers based?
Yeah, most of our, so like our top five countries are, you know, US, of course, Canada. A lot of traffic is coming in from Britain. A lot of traffic is coming in from Australia. And then India is usually like, India usually falls anywhere between like top four or top five. And then like in top 10, we have Pakistan and Bangladesh. So we are seeing a decent amount of interest and traffic and potential sponsors from India. So just a couple of months ago, I did have like back to back a couple of people reach out because they wanted to help me start teams in India. So very recently, I did speak to a potential editor who may be able to help me start a team in India. But right now, I'm really focused on fully establishing our growth in Canada and in the UK. But I think the next two countries that we would love to fully expand in is definitely Australia and India.
But why do you think that is, Trisha? Why is India in the top four and not the top country? I mean, I would ask that question to myself as well, but I don't have an answer.
So it's for us, you know, it makes perfect sense because we're focusing on South Asians who are living in the diaspora. We're not focusing on Indians living in India. So our content really is supposed to resonate with women like you and I who've left our home country maybe 30 years ago, or maybe our parents left 30, 40 years ago. And maybe we were born there, but we moved to Scotland or USA at the age of like 3 or 4, you know? So we're really focusing on people who have dual identities.
Well, what was it like financially when you started off, Trisha, and obviously with Aditi as well? Was there any sort of investment to start off with? Because I'm sure now you must have, you know, you must have a financial plan and everything considering you're so big. But how did it start off 10 years ago?
Sure. Yeah. So, I mean, I know Aditi started it off just like with some of her own money. I know that she spent money on like getting the first domain done, getting the, you know, server ready. She definitely paid for like the WordPress. She had told me that she had developed the website really just on her own, like the first website. This version that you're seeing right now, I think it's our fifth version maybe. Which we just updated in December. But yeah, we started off with nothing at all. And you know, I was briefly telling you guys the story. So in late 2013, Oxford Press had reached out to us and said, hey, we'd like to purchase a story in a blog piece from your website for $100. Send us your tax ID paper. And at this time in 2014, you know, we had been around already for like 5-6 years, but we weren't focusing on becoming a business or becoming sustainable. We were just blogging for fun. At that time, we had no clients that we were, you know, that we were promoting officially. But But regardless, we were promoting and marketing so many people in general, not realizing that we could actually receive money for it in return. So when Oxford Press had reached out to us and they said, hey, they'd like to give us $100, we were like, oh my God, like, this is insane. Like, we could use $100, you know? My dad, who's a CPA, thankfully, he helped us form our company into LLC. And, you know, it took us about 3 months to get the whole, to get everything in order. And, you know, at this time, my partners and I, we had never met. Aditi's in Texas. The other, at the time, my second partner, Tia, she was also in Texas, and I'm in New York. We all, like, literally signed papers as if it was, like, the, you know, the sisterhood of, like, the traveling bands. Like, we literally mailed our LLC papers to one another, signed it, and then mailed it back to my dad. And then Oxford Press had sent us $100. So that was, like, the first income we had ever earned, and it was a really big deal for us. And then slowly we started realizing, okay, cool, you know, we can actually sell small campaigns to authors and people who have these, like, cool, unique South Asian American companies, whether it's food, lifestyle, beauty, whatever it was. So at the time, I was pitching, like, $50 campaigns. It's like, hey, I'll do one Facebook post, we'll write one story for you on the website, you know, literally for $50. And that was a big deal at the time. So of course, we've grown since then, and we've definitely been able to work with numerous amazing people and clients and businesses through the years. So I think we've worked with at least, like, 60 plus at this time. So at any given time, we're running 5 to 7 campaigns. But still, we're still working towards becoming fully, fully sustainable. We're not there yet, but it's okay. You know, I think these past 4 months are completely new for us now that I'm officially doing it full time. So now we're thinking about things even differently than we were before.
And are the two other ladies that you mentioned, are they also involved as much as they were at the very beginning, or is it just you now?
Well, so I recently just acquired their shares at the end of last year officially. So we just made an internal deal where I would acquire 30% of each of their shares, leaving them both with 3% each. And they received a very good value for their shares. And so, so I did transition into CEO and running it wholeheartedly.
Mm.
We did discuss that the goal of Brown Girl Magazine was to cater to an audience that is based outside India, NRIs, non-residential Indians, basically. But do you have any data suggesting how many of these South Asian men and women from outside India are engaging with your content? Because, you know, inevitably you carry your culture and your country around with you no matter where you go. So is there a lot of engagement that is generated from them?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, like, just last year, we closed the year at more than 2 million page views. And so, so definitely, I mean, and you could knock off maybe, I don't know, maybe $100,000 from that. That's coming in from India. So in India, India is serving a decent amount. I'd have to look at numbers closely from India from last year. I can't remember off the top of my head. But engagement from across the world is definitely, you know, 2 million plus.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned earlier that India was in the top 4 or 5 of the countries who interact with Brown Girl Magazine. But, you know, now there's a big boost in technology with 3G and 4G. So I think generally there's a lot more access to reach out to people specifically in India. And I think that even people in India can also be empowered by learning how Indians outside of India live their life, because it's all about connecting the cultures wherever you are in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's the right time for us to fully establish ourselves in India. So if it doesn't happen this year, I know for a fact it's going to be top priority on our docket for next year, early next year. I know, even my own family, like, they're so in India, they're so invested in Brown Girl. You know, I recently went just a year and a half ago for my wedding shopping, and literally, like, I mean, I've actually, my full time right before this was to work for ZTV. So I was, of course, everyone knows the Indian channel. I was at ZTV for almost 4 years, producing a lot of content for them, also managing 2 different websites for them. But believe it or not, so much of my family in India was very excited to talk to me about Brown Girl as opposed to just talking to me about ZTV. So that was really cool. Yeah.
So the name Brown Girl Magazine itself suggests that it caters to South Asian women. But you mentioned a stat earlier that about 30% of your readers are men.
Yeah.
And that you've started tailoring content for South Asian men. So can you give us a few examples of how you would empower South Asian men through your content?
Sure, absolutely. So yeah, so we just started putting together a team of South Asian male writers. I think we have about 15 now. We just brought on an editor to fully focus on that. Her name is Forum Mehta. She's actually from our founding team of writers, also from Austin. So she's Aditi's good friend from college. And so she had been writing for Brown Girl on and off. And then she and I were working together at ZTV for a while as well. So I recently brought her on board to just, you know, help fully, you know, start our team of male writers. And a lot of the content that we're actually producing already is South Asian men writing about women, speaking about women, and just reflecting on the movement that we've started as South Asian women in the diaspora. So it's pretty cool. Like just like 2 weeks ago, we published a male writer published a piece on five superheroes to know, but all of the superheroes were actually female. So that's pretty cool. Just today we published another piece on Silky Mullick. She is a contender in Texas who's running for office. And it's pretty cool that, you know, that a South Asian male was interested in putting together a piece on a contender who's running in Texas. So a lot of the content that we will be producing will be written by our South Asian men, but for women.
Well, I think Ankita and I have, we have our sister website, feminismindia.com. We also had a male writer on board as well. And it was with the belief that if you want to encourage feminism, or if you want to encourage equality, you have to get both genders on board. I think there's a big misconception that only women are trying to empower women, but that's not the case really if you think about it, because a lot of men want to help as well. And I think you're doing a great job by getting men involved in women's issues.
Absolutely. Yeah. That's the whole purpose of it, yeah.
Mm. And also, Trisha, our parents are also much more active on social media and much more apt in using the internet. So do you think you could use your platform to reach out to them with relatable content as well?
Yeah, of course. I mean, it's really exciting to see, but we do see traffic from 45 plus. And that's the whole purpose of us even first starting to focus on the 35 plus market. So we put together a team of parenting writers last year so that at least the younger parents can start reading and engaging with us more so that their kids, you know, understand this new wave of South Asians and who we are as people. And so I think through them, we're going to be able to really attract and engage more with the 45 plus as well, which is more in line with our parents' demographic.
Yeah, because I feel like a lot of the challenges we face in our society, especially, they date way back from not just our parents, but even our grandparents as well. And I think, for example, if my parents read some articles in Brown Girl magazine, then it would bring rise to some interesting conversations between us. And perhaps maybe we could live a bit more harmoniously with all the older generations and get in sync with everybody.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
I would love that. I mean, I know that, you know, my family and, you know, my parents, they're definitely engaged with it, but it's always exciting to see when older moms come up to me and they always say, you know, my daughter loves Brown Girl, or, you know, my daughter would love to speak to you, you know, about journalism or what you're doing. So that's always exciting. And that happens a lot. So it is exciting.
We just established that Brown Girl has a wide audience. It caters to all kinds of people. And you guys work really hard round the clock. But could you tell us about the challenges your magazine has faced even in the past 10 years and even 10 years after it's been founded? What are the challenges that you guys face today?
Absolutely. The challenges are definitely great. I think one of the biggest challenges has really just been the lack of funding, with a combination of lack of time. because everyone is doing this on a part-time freelance basis. So even though we do have a pretty significant team, we have 10 editors, you know, we have 6 people on our social media team, 150 contributors, you know, we have people on our events team, newsletter team, marketing team, but still, like, everyone is pursuing a full-time job or they're in school full-time and they can only dedicate X number of hours to BG at a time. So something that could be done in a matter of maybe 2 days can take almost 2 weeks. And it's not because we're lazy. It's because we just don't have enough bandwidth and we don't have enough time. And the demand is pretty high. You know, just last year, we published 900 pieces of content. That means we're publishing basically 365 days of the year, which is true. There's basically every weekend we're also publishing content. There's only some weekends where we're not. So we really are working 24/7, and we're trying our best to keep up with the trends and keep up with all like the high tech media that is now a reality. But I think lack of funding and lack of time is still one of our biggest, you know, contenders.
You mentioned a couple of times during this interview that most people who work for Brown Girl do it part-time because they have, you know, their full-time jobs or their college studies, whatever. But so it's very interesting to me what motivates them to keep coming back and keep producing content. How do you encourage them to do that? Is it like a paid internship? What happens there?
Yeah, I mean, trust me, I'm like literally every day I'm in awe of the women who continue to work on Brown Girl, you know, just out of their own sheer desire to make this platform sustainable and to make this platform a reality. So, you know, I look at Brown Girl as completely different because I've made it my life's work. So I don't give up on Brown Girl, but I look at like literally like the 50 women around me that I'm literally interacting with on a daily basis, whether it's my editors or social media managers, like these girls are doing this at work during their lunch break. They're doing it in the morning. They're doing it at night at 9 p.m. You know, like on weekends, I host. That's when I host all of my calls with my meetings. I just hosted an editorial call with 5 of my editors at 9 p.m. on a Sunday. And we were on our phone. We were on the call until almost 11 p.m., you know, and I'm rushing these girls off, but they're okay to continue talking. We were brainstorming and discussing. We pretty much do monthly calls with almost every team on board. And I do schedule them ahead of time, but I have to schedule them at very odd hours. That way everyone is at home and everyone is accessible. And now we're also working with multiple time zones. So I am working with the, you know, the California time zone, the London time zone, and then of course the Eastern time zone. So I always have to host meetings at very odd hours. And, but these girls, they're in, you know, they're all in. And every time I'm just grateful to them. And so there are teams that we do pay on a monthly basis, but we're not paying everybody because it's impossible and we're not that sustainable yet.
Yeah, the other day, Trisha, I spoke to a CEO of a publishing group here in Scotland, and the publishing group started, I think, in 2008, like Brown Girl magazine. And for the past 10 years, they've been doing their job. They still take in interns and everything. But the CEO told me that the company was running in loss for the first 5 years, and it started making a little bit of profit in the past 5 years, and it's only now that they're beginning to cover their costs. So she still doesn't take a salary. So I want to ask you, I hope this is not too personal, but do you take a salary from Brown Girl?
So I consider it a stipend. I take a stipend, and I don't take it as regularly as I should. I really base that stipend around what my personal needs are. So really, I officially started doing this in October. So last year, I really wasn't taking anything at all. It's really just in the past couple of months that I'm a little bit more comfortable in paying myself. But I wouldn't call what I'm taking a full salary. I wish that
I'm
it
really
was.
Sorry if you sound so nosy.
No, it's not. No,
it's just that we're so, you know, it's just we're so interested in the inner workings of big content creating machines like Brown Girl magazine. That's why we wanted to ask you these questions.
Yeah, it's important questions to ask. And I think what everyone should know is that being a creative, it all comes down to passion, you know. So I pay myself in the passion. And so, you know, and not everyone can do this. I truly am grateful. The stars have aligned for me that I can do this. I live in New York City, but I have a very supportive husband. I have an extremely supportive set of parents who allow me to continue to do this. But I always remind the close team at Brown Girl, I remind them this a lot, that this cannot continue for a very long time. You know, we do need to work to become fully sustainable, or else I will also have to, at some point, be realistic with what I'm doing with my life, you know? And so as much as we are growing, and I'm grateful for the growth, and I love the exposure, and we're seeing, you know, just, we're seeing so much love, you know, in our DMs and our emails, so many companies and people are reaching out to us, and you know, we are definitely making a revenue. So I am very excited to share that. But there's going to come a point where I'm going to have to possibly make a hard decision. But hopefully before that happens, you know, I'm working towards raising a small round for Brown Girl, and hopefully some sort of a seed round will help sustain us.
I think it's, and we're so grateful that you're being so honest right now with us, Trisha, because I feel like a lot of young people out there have big ideas about, you know, starting a website, or even just the other day, a young girl in India just messaged me for some help, and she wanted to start an online store with her art. And she was like, yeah, you know, I'm going to start this, and then probably within 1 month I'll start making money. I was like, dude, it doesn't work like that. You know, it does take a lot of time, and there's going to be maybe a couple of years until I can actually say, okay, this is my full-time job. And I think a lot of, because so many people seem to be so successful on the internet, it's quite deceptive, especially to the younger generation who have a lot more freedom to do what they want with their time.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, what you see on Instagram isn't really always what you get, you know? I mean, there's a ton of South Asian influencers who are definitely making a decent amount on, you know, just through curating content and also photos and videos. So there's, of course, many successful South Asian influencers and platforms like ourselves that are making a revenue. It just comes with time, you know. So there are definitely people that, you know, that kind of started this and boom, in 1 year they really took off. So I definitely know a handful of people around me, and sometimes I look at them and I'm like, oh my god, like, we've been doing this for a while, like, what am I not doing right, you know? But then I have to keep telling myself, this is Brown Girl's path, this is my destiny, and, you know, I have to just continue following my own journey. So, you know, that's just, you know, to help me get through the day. Yeah.
And we were also talking about all the teams that you have in place, so many people contributing content and also editing. But I'm very curious about this. I think I'm going to ask you another nosy question. is there a team that sits down and follows up on what's current and provides ideas to the writers, or is it the responsibility of the writers to just come up with their own content?
Yeah, so it's a little bit of both. So we do have 10 editors. Each editor focuses on a different beat. So whether it's entertainment, politics, Indo-Caribbean, relationships, you know, humanities, so on and so forth. So we do monthly pitches where we are, as editors, pitching ideas to our writers. And then, of course, we're keeping up with day-to-day pitches as well. So anything that's timely, we put it up in our private group right away. So we have a really large private group on Facebook. And then we also have smaller private groups as well, where we're continuously talking. So these groups are very active. They're active pretty much 24/7. So it could literally be like Sunday at 11 p.m. and our Facebook group could be just like popping off on XYZ topic. So the writers themselves, they're literally like my gatekeepers. And I'm so grateful for them, because they're always on, you know, like, these girls are literally just always on. They're not the type to go home and just turn on the TV and just become couch potatoes. They're going home from like a 12-hour shift at the hospital, and they're producing content, and they're, you know, they're active. They're sharing something on Facebook, or they're hitting me up via Slack and being like, hey, did you get my story up? I sent it a few days ago, you know? So that it's a combination of the hard work and effort that the editors are putting in, and a lot of it is just the writers being amazing gatekeepers and us keeping up with timely content. So timely content for us does the best. You know, just 3 days ago, we saw, I think, close to 10,000 hits on a piece about, you know, a young boy, you know, from Canada. Maybe you guys heard the story of Pavithar Basi. I hope I'm pronouncing his name correctly. But yeah, that piece alone in just one day saw close to 10K in views. And that's because we were just very timely with his story and with his situation. And it wouldn't have happened if our writers didn't get on it right away and if our editors didn't publish it.
Yeah. We recently had the founder of She the People TV. I don't know if you've heard of them, Tricia. They're a digital media company in India. And we discussed the idea of clickbait with the founder, Shelly Chopra. And, you know, we are at a very crucial time in our generation where content is thrown at us left, right, and center. And sometimes it's quite difficult to filter the right stuff. And as with any business, it's important to build a following, of course, and also give the readers what they want. But as Brown Girl magazine, how and where do you draw the line between getting clicks and getting real and raw content out there?
Yeah, so I mean, if you even skim the site for less than 10 minutes, you'll see that there is really nothing clickbaity about us. And I'm really proud of that. And I think the reason for that is all the editors that we do have on board, before anything else, they're hardcore journalists who believe in free press. And we believe in real valuable content. And I struggle with this all the time, you know, because like, we're not like BuzzFeed. We're not putting out like a lot of fluff listicles. And I think BuzzFeed in itself, they've expanded so much because they're doing such amazing reporting. But a lot of their traffic is still coming in from like those very fluff listicles and those quizzes, you know, so we're not doing any of that because we just want to be a platform that's just focusing on hard hitting content. And it's a huge struggle internally because we could be putting out a lot of just fluff that may take less time to do and it could be very clickbaity. But I think all of us as editors, like, we actually have to tell ourselves, like, hey, let's actually try to do something fun. Like, we literally have to tell ourselves that. So, like, you know, maybe you notice, like, on our social media pages, especially on Instagram and also on Facebook, we put out a lot of just, like, fun memes. Like, we do at least 2 to 3 a week so that we could add something fun to our content and we could break it up from being super hard-hitting, you know? And so we like to break it up with more beauty and more lifestyle-generated content as well. But none of us even know how to do a clickbaity type of headline. I try sometimes. I'm like, let me try. Like, what does that feel like? You know, we honestly do. Like, sometimes I look at other headlines and I'm like, we should try to write headlines like that, you know? But all of us just come from like a very hardcore journalistic background that it's hard for us to like pivot in that way. It's a good thing, but kind of a bad thing.
Yeah, well, I think that's why Brown Girl magazine has sustained for so long, probably. You know,
probably,
it's the real content that you're putting out there. If not, it probably would have died out quite soon if it was just all clickbaity articles. But when your editors are going through the writer's work, do they have a set of guidelines, or have you made your own set of guidelines to make sure that the content that you put out there goes with your ethos as Brown Girl magazine?
Absolutely. Yeah. Every single piece is being vetted and checked by at least 1 to 3 editors. Usually the final check is coming in from me. So there are times where, you know, I will change up a story many times. Like, of course, not the sense of it, but I will make sure that it connects with who we are. And there's times where we have to, you know, or we have to say no, that we can't publish so-and-so piece, but that doesn't happen often. I feel like the people, all the writers who are writing for us, and we survive a lot on our guest submissions as well. You know, I'd say honestly, probably like 99% of our guest submissions are being published because people are reaching out to us knowing exactly what to submit. And then we do have great guidelines. So we have, you know, our style guide, we have our submissions guideline, we have a guest submissions guideline, you know, so we have a ton of stuff. We have a handbook. So everything is pretty, it's self. So we do have, you know, pretty straightforward guidelines. It's very helpful.
No, we were talking about Shelly Chopra from She the People TV just now, and another question we asked her was, it was not really a question. She told us how she caters to a wider audience in India because they release their content even in Hindi. And, you know, India has 22 main languages and up to 5,000 local dialects with each language. And you won't believe this, Tricia, but we've had people complain to us that they find our conversations hard to follow because we speak in English. And they suggested that we cater to a bigger audience in India by speaking in Hindi on our podcast. But as Brown Girl, have you received similar feedback, or have you struggled with the language barrier at all?
A little bit. I think internally, yes. internally, some of our girls want us to make sure that if we're writing something in Hindi, that it should be translated in English, but not vice versa. So we don't have people reaching out to us saying, hey, you know, you should write content in Hindi. So that hasn't happened to us. But internally, a lot of the girls who don't speak Hindi want us to make sure that we're translating everything for them in English. Yeah, but that's interesting that was approached to you. Yeah.
But if you do expand in India, would you consider releasing content to different languages?
I think it would be worthwhile to look into, for sure. Mm. That's why it is tough to launch in India, because it's just so different. The market, the media journalism market in India is so different that it's going to take a lot more research before we fully establish ourselves there. So even like the couple of people that I did speak to, it's interesting, like even some of the categories and subcategories that we have, like they assumed that the content in those subcategories were completely different than what we're actually writing about. So like, you know, it could be something simple as like, I don't even know, like I had a few examples in my head when I was talking to this one editor, and, you know, XYZ subcategory to me meant something completely different to her. And I was like, oh gosh, okay, this is going to be a lot of work. Yeah. So, because we weren't meant to be in India, we were meant to be in the diaspora. So I think launching in Australia and the UK and Canada is easy peasy for us, you know, but I think launching in India will be a little bit harder.
Mm. And the name Brangle magazine itself suggests that, you know, you're like a force to lean on when things get hard for girls within the South Asian community, and obviously for men as well, as we were speaking about earlier. And one of the main problems girls face is, you know, especially in India, is related to sexual assault in whatever shape or form. And, you know, we recently had the case of the 6-year-old girl who was brutally tortured and gang raped in a temple in India. Now that's even turned into like a big political case, and it's just very messy. But are these particular, you know, sensitive topics a priority for Brangle magazine? Because obviously you want someone who knows what they're talking about, you know, to write about this kind of stuff. So are you very careful about these things?
Super careful. Like insanely careful, because our bread and butter is hard hitting content. So like, you know, we were putting out some content on Asifa on Saturday, and I was at my best friend's proposal, and, you know, I was like fully involved in the planning, you know, making sure that she was going to get there on time, that her fiance was going to be there, flowers, this, that, and the other. But I literally stopped everything that I was doing to make sure that what we were putting out at like 1 p.m. on Saturday was like perfect to a T. I got like 5 girls involved right away in our Slack channel. And I was like, everyone read this for me 5 times and tell me how it sounds. And I was like, send it back to me. One editor sent it back to me. I was like, nope, send it back to me again. It's not good yet. And then like what my best friend was literally talking to me, and I was like, babe, I'm so sorry. I just need to quickly finish. I literally stepped to the side, read it all over again. It was like, I think 4 paragraphs, like 4 lengthy paragraphs, and added some stuff, edited it back, send it back to my editor. 5 minutes later, she sent it right back to me. So like, it's literally like on, like I could be, you know, walking down the street doing whatever, but this is utmost priority. So making sure that we got her story right, especially because Asifa's story is really complicated. Why it happened is absolutely messed up. I just wanted to make sure that we were hitting all the points right. And it's a very, like, it's very political, you know, so it's always nerve-wracking to get political, and we don't want to ever pick one side over the other. But in this case, it was important for us to really make known that the one party who's kind of, you know, speaking against this or whatever it was, it needed to be told properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's just like one example of how we do it. But we're on our Slack channel. You know, I have my girls sending me content back and forth, and I will literally take, I don't care, I'll take 2 hours before I put it out. I will literally tell everybody, I'm not happy with it. It's not going up. And these girls are literally just waiting for me to say yes, because they're doing their own thing, right? Like, it's a Saturday afternoon.
Yeah.
My girls were waiting to publish this, and I was like, nope, it's not going up. It is not right yet. We don't have it right. And so that means a lot to me that these girls will kind of just like wait on me to give them the green light. And so as soon as I was happy with it, I was like, all right, let's get it out right now. It was up in 10 seconds, you know? So yeah, that's just how it is.
And Brown Girl recently started a podcast as well, Queering Desi. What's the reception for that been like?
Yeah, it's been good. We're definitely excited about it. You know, so Priya Arora is the host, and she herself is queer. She's actually getting married this August to her partner, Rima, and I'm excited. I'm going to her wedding. It's going to be in Cancun. And more than that, it's an interfaith marriage. You know, so Priya's Hindu. Her partner is Ismaili Muslim. So it's a very interesting. There's a lot of layers to this. There's a lot of layers to her life, and I've been, you know, watching her grow. And she used to write for a website that's still around, the Airgram. So that's how I found her. And you know, I was looking for a full time editor to come on board when I was at ZTV, and I had always like remembered her work. And honestly, I just reached out to her and I was like, hey, you know, we don't really know each other, but I've been following you on the internet. But this is now almost 5 years ago, and so yeah, so we got super cool. And she was one of my editors at Brown Girl as well. But she, you know, her full-time job had kind of stopped her from fully being an editor, but this podcast is like the perfect middle ground for us. So she's taken full lead on it. It's her concept. It's her idea. And she brings on all the guests for it. What I do as Brown Girl is I host it and I help fund it. And we're looking to grow it even further. And so, you know, tomorrow she's actually releasing a pretty cool episode with a South Asian actor in Hollywood. He was in that show, maybe you've heard of it, Atypical on Netflix.
I like that guy, the boy,
the friend.
Yeah.
His name is Nick Dodani. I hope I'm pronouncing his last name right. So
he's awesome.
He's so cool, right? I thought he was awesome. Yeah. So it's cool that we got a hold of him, and you know, he's gonna be on tomorrow's episode, which we will be releasing. It's a lot of fun for her. And I think that she's been able to do a lot of community activist work throughout the year. So I think this podcast is like a nice full circle moment for her, because she's able to bring on a lot of the friends that she's worked with. And then we're going to be doing a couple of things. You know, we're doing a small launch party this Saturday. Then in June, which is Pride Month here in the US, we're going to be putting out some sort of a gender fluid photo shoot. We're going to be doing our own small panel discussion / party that will celebrate the end of season one for Queering Desi. This will be the end of June. So, you know, we're hoping to do a few things and get the word out there. But overall, the response has been really good. Priya's happy. You know, the viewership is pretty decent. And then hopefully in the next few months, we'll be able to really put some numbers on paper and really see how we did.
You know, Trisha, we're close to 70 episodes in with Desi Outsiders. And one of the first episodes that we released was about something silly like love marriage. And what we did, Meenal and I would just sit down and share stories and experiences of people that we know, our own stories. And we put out a story that had a few triggers in it about, you know, a little bit of domestic abuse within a family when a girl chose a partner for herself. You know, it was things that a lot of South Asians can relate to. But we got a little bit of backlash from some of our listeners who sided with the perpetrator. It was a bit disturbing to us when that happened. So we were wondering, when it's especially such a sensitive topic about queer people within the Desi community, have you encountered similar issues? Have you received any kind of response like that?
For Queering Desi in particular?
Yeah.
Not yet. No, not yet. And I will definitely ask Priya as well. I just spoke to her a few days ago because she is like full lead on this. So she is receiving all of the, like all the emails and DMs. From what I know, it's been very positive from what I'm seeing in the comments and in just people who are approaching me. It's been really, really positive. So I'm hoping that it continues to be that way. Maybe for us, it's just like we're doing it at like the right time. I'm not sure if we're just like getting lucky with it. But so far, it's been okay.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, we just wanted to go back to you, Trisha, as Trisha. Let's put Brown Girl magazine to the side for a little bit. I read up that you wanted to be a lawyer, and your parents and even you invested quite a lot to get you to that stage. But you said that it wasn't working for you, and being a lawyer just wasn't who you were. And now here you are working with Brown Girl magazine. So what was that like? You did mention that you were under a lot of stress. So what made you transition from lawyer to media?
Absolutely. Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I majored in political science. I got a double minor in women's studies and journalism, and I got my master's in public policy in the hopes that it would really prep me for law school. You know, and I had taken the LSAT exam, which is the entry for law school, 4 different times. You know, I had gone to 3 different courses that would help me prep for my LSAT. I also did LSAT private tutoring. So I spent almost, you know, 2.5 years just pursuing law school and studying for it. But my husband ended up going to law school. So my parents, it kind of worked out for my parents. But yeah, for me, it just like didn't work out. You know, a bunch of things had happened around the time. Personal, health, professional. There were just so many signals that just like, that, you know, in hindsight, I look back and I'm like, well, no, duh, that's why I didn't go to law school. You know, there were so many things pointing at me that really just, it was, you know, when you have something that's, when you really want to do something and you try your hardest, sometimes it just doesn't work out. And it's okay to let go of it. And it obviously took me some time to let go of it. And I was, of course, devastated. And I kept thinking, like, oh, my God, like, am I not going to succeed at anything now? You know, but as just a sheer coincidence, I had picked up journalism as a minor. And I only picked up journalism as a minor to kind of boost my resume for law school because I wanted them to see that I'm a really good reader and writer. So I did journalism kind of for, like, selfish reasons, not realizing that I really would fall in love with media and specifically South Asian media. And I just never realized that curating South Asian content would mean so much to me. And yeah, so I've just now been officially dabbling in South Asian media for almost the past 6 to 7 years. And I'm grateful for that. And I was able to check off the lawyer box because my husband went to law school.
So someone in the family is a lawyer at
exactly.
least.
Exactly. So my dad's happy.
Did you meet in law school though?
We met in college. So I had asked him, honestly, I mean, like I literally asked him to study with me because I was bored to study alone. That's like literally what it was. Like I literally didn't want to study. And I was like, and I knew that he was like super analytical, but you know, he was doing government and politics in college as well. That's the reason we met. We had met through mutual friends back in 2010. And one of the reasons we met was because my friend was like, oh, you know, hey, I know he's from a different university than I was, but he was like, hey, listen, I have a friend, you know, he's also Hindu Punjabi, which is what I am. And he was like, you know, he's really interested in law and government, politics, this, that, and the other. Like, he keeps up with the news. And I had always had a really good interest in the news. And so I was like, okay, cool, whatever. Like, yeah, so, you know, a couple of years in, I was like, hey, listen, like, I really want to go to law school, this, that, and the other. You know, I'm taking Kaplan courses. Do you want to just, like, look at my book and kind of study with me? And yeah, so, you know, he came to my private tutoring with me as well. And he just sat there, but the tutor was there for me. And he just like, just took everything in. And he did pretty well on his LSATs, did really well in law school. And then he was able to co-found a startup that now helps lawyers. So it's called lawtrades.com. It's a shameless plug for my husband's company. But so he doesn't practice law, but, you know, he works with lawyers all day.
Wow. Well, you did mention that you were working with ZTV and you were creating content for them. Did your role in ZTV help you quite significantly with what you do with Brown Girl Magazine right now?
A little bit. I think so, for sure. I was able to manage quite a large team at Z. I was able to understand like how a big corporation like Z curates and produces their content. I was also, I think the coolest thing I was able to do was help launch a new website called theteelmango.com. And I was able to work with multiple developers from literally around the world. And so I was really able to learn the ins and outs of what it takes to even build a website. So this new website that you're seeing right now at Brown Girl, I'm really proud to say that like I was able to fully understand like the ins and outs of every button on this website. And it's because of what I learned at Z. So being at Z was a really cool experience. They put a lot on my shoulders and they did that because they saw the work I was doing at Brown Girl. So I think both went hand in hand. Like I brought a lot to Z from Brown Girl. Basically, every single editor I hired at Z in some way came from Brown Girl. And so I had a team of about 30 writers at Z, and I had a team of about 4 editors. which changed over the course of the years because I was there for almost 4 years and I had a developer there, you know, in-house. I had a graphic designer there in-house. So everything at Z was very different from what it is at BG, but they both went hand in hand.
I feel like this conversation's come full circle because we're talking about Brown Girl magazine again. So to end this interview, Tricia, what's next for Brown Girl?
Next for Brown Girl, of course, you know, we're really focused on fully establishing our teams in the UK and Canada, and then really making sure our podcast Queering They See is out there. It's in, you know, it's in everyone's mouths, and they know that Brown Girl now has a new outlet as well. So that's a big goal for us. The second thing we're working on right now is an anthology that we're very close to publishing. We have a manuscript ready, but essentially, the anthology is focusing on the South Asian American immigrant experience from the voices of young South Asian women. So we have about, you know, 35, 40 submissions in there, original submissions written by our own staff. The stories relate to, you know, their life with their families, activism, politics, like anything and everything that you'd want to read when it comes to being a South Asian woman. And Tanuja Desai Haider, who's the author of Born Confused and Bombay Blues, she just wrote us the foreword. So we were really lucky to have her write that. And yeah, so hopefully we'll release that soon. And then other than that, from a business standpoint, we're really focused on, you know, hopefully raising a small seed round for the company before the year ends. So, of course, always looking for angels who would be willing to, you know, invest in the work that we're doing. So, so I hope they're out there and listening.
Yeah. Well, we wish we had more time to speak to you, Tricia, because I'm sure there's a lot more about you personally we could talk about as well.
Absolutely.
But if there is anybody who'd want to get in touch with you or even, you know, contribute to Brown Girl magazine, how could they do that?
Sure. Yeah. So we're super active. So honestly, if they DM us on any platform, Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, they will see a reply from us. Of course, they can always email us at our main email address, which is literally just staff@browngirlmagazine.com. We usually reply anywhere between 48 hours. Of course, if you want to reach out to me, it's super easy. The best way to do it is through Instagram because I'm very active on Instagram. So please feel free to follow me and DM me there at tsakuja _walia. And of course, as soon as you email the staff account, my amazing email manager, Pari, will let me know right away that I've received emails. I think that's how we got in contact together. So,
yeah. We'll leave all of this information in the show notes for anybody who would like to. And we really are very excited to see what Brown Girl magazine can grow into. And we really wish you all the best with everything, Tricia. Thank you so much for your time today.
Of course. Thank you, ladies. You guys are so sweet. And I'm glad that we were able to connect even before this episode. And, you know, we have your piece as well. So we'll make sure that we get it published. And that we, you know, that we help each other grow. So
fantastic.
I love chatting with you ladies, and I hope we can work together even more.
Awesome.
And thank you, dear listeners, for joining us today. And thank you, dear Tricia, for finding the time in your crazy schedule to sit down and have this lovely chat with us. Tricia, you've been simply amazing, and we're very happy to put this content out there. We're hoping that a lot of young listeners would be inspired to start contributing content to Brown Girl magazine as well. And if you want to get in touch with Tricia to contribute to Brown Girl magazine, check out their website, browngirlmagazine.com, and drop Tricia or the staff an email, which you can find in our show notes.
You can also find us on social media at DC Outsiders. And if you have any comments or feedback, we're happy to hear from you. You can drop us a mail to mail@dcoutsiders.com. So until next week. I'm Meenal.
And I'm Ankita.
And we are the Desi Outsiders.
Okay, bye.